Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the National Association of Realtors has settled a major lawsuit over the way agent and broker commissions are structured and applied. What does this mean for the industry and for home buyers and sellers, especially as the all-important spring real estate market begins to heat up? We'll take a closer look. Also this morning, newly elected state legislative nominee Ty Matthews shares reaction to results of Tuesday's primary vote and what lies ahead in his bid to represent Ohio's 83rd district. And happening around town, get ready for Bakery Trivia, a night of fun to benefit the Adaptco program, building an all-inclusive Hancock County community. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, March 21st, 2024. How do you like the weather so far this spring? How do you like it so far? We barely made it out of the 30s yesterday, or, well, we didn't make it out of the 30s yesterday. We barely made it above freezing yesterday. We're in the teens to start the day, or it feels like we're in the teens. Middle teens, not just in the teens, but the middle teens, darn near close to the single digits on the second full day of spring. You know, on my way to the studio this morning, I saw someone out jogging. I thought to myself, are you nuts? That can't be good for you. That cannot be healthy. I mean, I understand the concept, but out there in that kind of weather, in shorts, no less, jogging, that can't be healthy. But anyway, I don't know how much how healthy this would be either. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Did you hear about this? The Great American Trail. The idea is to connect the coasts, East Coast and West Coast, on a walking and bicycling trail. One Great American Trail from coast to coast. You could walk from Atlantic to Pacific, or the other way around, or bike from one end of the country to the other. Congress has authorized $45 million to be spent on this project, and the program currently includes 125 existing trails across 12 states. They're spending $45 million on this, which I guess for the federal government is a drop in the bucket, but still. The biggest obstacle, they say, is the Ohio River separating West Virginia and Ohio. A walking bridge could cost $35 million by itself, or even more. One of the advocates for the Great American Trail, an outdoorsman by the name of Mike O'Neill, said it would be a wonderful blessing to have it all connected. Are you thinking of walking from one end of the country to the other, or riding your bicycle from one end of the country? I don't know. It's a pretty ambitious project. I'm just not sure how much. I guess it's like the interstate. You can drive the interstate without having to drive from one end of the country to the other. You could use this without having to drive to walk or ride your bike from one end of the country to the other, but it's this coast-to-coast walking or biking trail. I don't know. This is good news, very good news. You know, the Summer Olympics coming to Paris here in just a few months, and the ban on fornication between the athletes has been lifted. Do you remember? This was a big story when they held the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo in 2021, because they were delayed by the pandemic. They didn't know whether they're going to actually have the Olympics. They decided, okay, we're going to have the Olympics, but they put a ban on socialization between the athletes, because apparently a lot of that goes on in the dorms. Not surprisingly, I suppose, but there was a strict ban on that type of socializing between the athletes. Well, now that ban that was introduced during the COVID-19 pandemic has finally been lifted. The International Olympic Committee and organizers of the Paris Olympic Games say they want the event to be inclusive. And they say it is in keeping with their theme of games wide open. That is the official slogan of the Paris Summer Olympics. Games wide open, and they say it will be. They have thrown the gates wide open. and In conjunction with that, they have ordered 300,000 prophylactics to be distributed to the athletes. So they've got it all covered. So big news there. Every day we have to have something to be fearful of, to be concerned about. And this is it. A cicada apocalypse, they say, is coming this spring and summer. The cicada apocalypse. So I guess there are different broods of the cicadas. Some of them come out, what, every 16 years? Some of them come out every 17 years. Isn't there one that comes out every 24 years or something? Anyway, apparently they are all aligned. I mean, eventually they all line up in one year. They all come out, and this is the year, from what I understand. All of the cicadas are going to come out this year. So you're talking trillions of bugs, which obviously will be very loud. It's a big mess when they start dying and you get the carcasses all over. But there is something even more intriguing that you have to worry about. An interesting fact that many people are not aware of. These little buggers apparently pee with a vengeance. I'm not kidding about this. Scientists say that cicadas actually hold the record for the strongest jet stream of urine. There's no other way to put this. The strongest urine jet stream of any studied animal close to their size. Cicadas, it says here, drink 300 times their weight in xylem or plant sap every single day. And when they relieve themselves, they can shoot their bodily fluids about 10 feet a second. So the Georgia Tech College of Engineering actually has put together a demonstration video of the bugs emptying their bladders, if you are interested in seeing how they... So this is what we are worried about. We have the have trillions of peeing cicadas to worry about this spring and summer, because they're all coming out this year. It's the cicada apocalypse, and watch out, because they can't hold it any longer. Some good news with spring here, though. You've got a reason now to slack off on your spring cleaning. According to Elizabeth McCormick, author of the new book, Inside Out, Human Health and the Air Conditioning Era, she says she's a professor of architecture and building technology at the University of North Carolina, and she says, trying to purify your home might be harming your immune system. We need, she says, some good bacteria in our homes. This is an extension of the idea, the theory that so many kids these days have so many allergies and things like that, because we are putting them in a bubble trying to purify and, you know, get rid of the bacteria that's all around them. And we're doing it so much that we are not exposing them to minute amounts so that they can build up immunity. Same thing by extension with your spring cleaning. Don't do a deep spring clean to the point where you're purifying everything in your home. It may actually be doing you more harm than good. So I read that as forget your spring cleaning. Don't worry about it. You don't have to tell me twice. That is good news. And I saw this on the Newswire I thought was very interesting, and maybe the law of unintended consequences at play. I'll put this out here, and you can make of it what you will, depending on your thoughts on this subject, but abortions in this country are up, despite bans being enacted in more than a dozen states since Roe v. Wade was overturned. More than a million abortions were performed nationwide in 2023, 1 year after the Supreme Court ended the constitutional right to an abortion. The Guttmacher Institute, a nonprofit based in New York City, found a 10% jump in abortions since 2020, the highest number in a decade, with a growing number of those being medication-induced abortions. Their report also said that some women are traveling for abortions, mostly to states bordering their own, where abortion is legal. So if it's illegal in one state, they'll go to a neighboring state. And that has gone up. So do we call it the law of unintended consequences, that you overturn Roe v. Wade and the number of abortions actually go up? Or was that anticipated? Just something to think about there. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Mostly sunny today, a high around 40. Increasing clouds tonight, a low around 30. University of Findlay and Bluffton University have announced that they've signed a memorandum of understanding declaring the intention to pursue a merger of their two universities. The University of Findlay and Bluffton University would become one higher education community on two campuses. Officials made clear that Bluffton University is not closing and Bluffton's campus is not going away. Pending all regulatory approvals, the merger is anticipated to be completed by the fall of 2025. University of Findlay President Dr. Catherine Fell says, "We're all aware that higher education is facing significant changes and challenges, and these times call upon us to be innovative and forward-thinking." Get more on this merger and the story on our website. The Blanchard Valley Center, the Hancock County Board of Developmental Disabilities, is thanking voters for approving their renewal levy that was on the Tuesday primary ballot.
To know that the community supports our mission and values the work that we do each and every day, providing services and supports to people with developmental disabilities in Hancock County, means the world to us.
That's BVC's Nadine Weininger. Learn more about the Hancock County Board of Developmental Disabilities and the programs and services they offer in the story on our website. The city of Findlay did not test its outdoor warning sirens on Wednesday morning as part of the statewide tornado drill. The city says it has some scheduled maintenance and repairs of its equipment that prevented them from participating in the statewide testing on Wednesday morning during Severe Weather Awareness Week. The city says it'll be conducting its own citywide testing of its outdoor warning equipment in the near future. LeBron has weighed in on Ohio State's new basketball coach.
The King congratulated Ohio State's own Jake Diebler after he was promoted to the Ohio State men's basketball head coach. LeBron James posted on his Instagram account saying, "Congrats, Deebs." Jake Diebler is the first Ohioan to be named the head coach in 35 years. Mm-hmm. And LeBron, of course, is from Akron. I'm Yolanda Harris.
Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So now our cover story this morning. You may have heard this news a few days ago. The National Association of Realtors reached a settlement over a major lawsuit regarding the way agent and broker commissions have been structured and applied in the past. And joining us this morning, kind of unpack what this means for the industry and for home buyers and home sellers. What does this mean for the industry? Brian Witt is with us from Coldwell Banker Flag City. What does this mean for the industry, first off?
Well, ultimately, it just means we're going to pivot again. This is another point in the history of real estate where some things are just going to change.
That is one of the more interesting things, because just to kind of step back here, the traditional way in for several decades, the way brokers and agents have been paid is you take 6% off the top from the selling price of the home, and then that generally is split between the buyer and seller agents.
So it's been actually close to 100 years that the traditional splits have occurred. Now, I will preface all of this by saying, in case these attorneys are listening to your radio show, we cannot set commissions. That's an antitrust violation, and that's part of what they're alleging that NAR had done.
Mm-hmm. It's a de facto standard has been 6%.
It is business practice sometimes that that's the number, but every brokerage sets their own number. Mm-hmm. And that's really important that consumers know that. It is a company policy. It is never set by any level of association.
So what happens now? I mean, obviously, agents, brokers such as yourself need to be paid. They're certainly not saying that you can't take commissions.
Well, let's unpack the settlement a little bit, because what the media, not WFIN, but what the rest of the media outside of Ohio chose to do is make a very incorrect statement when this broke on Friday and say
How so?
It's now going to cost consumers less money to sell their home. Now, that would require brokers to all in a free market to change their policy.
Mm-hmm.
That does not necessarily mean, because this settled, that brokerage policy is going to change.
Yeah. So it could, however, because this settlement does give, I don't want to say, and again, this was part of the reporting that I know was not quite accurate, in that this now settlement gives consumers more power to negotiate those fees. Well, consumers have always had that.
They've always had the ability to negotiate, always.
But now they know about it, and more than likely, consumers may be more aggressive at doing so.
Right, and it also doesn't mean that the agent has to agree to do it. Negotiation is just what two parties agree to.
Right.
If a company says, we know our risk and we know what we're going to invest in marketing, they may choose to leave it alone.
One of the things that was brought up in the reporting on this, and I think it does bring up a valid point, is that, again, the commission generally comes from the selling price of the home, meaning that, and then it is split with the buyer's agent. So in a de facto way, in a roundabout way, you actually have a home seller who is paying the buyer's agent to negotiate against them.
The way a listing agreement is spelled out, just to clarify, because a lot of people don't know this, the way a listing agreement is spelled out, you're actually compensating the listing agent.
Mm-hmm.
The listing agent's brokerage cooperates with the buyer. They're the ones sharing that.
Right. So it... Right, in the technically technical way of working, but the de facto way that it works out is that, you know, people feel like, you know, I'm paying the other agent. I end up paying the other agent for working against me. So my question then is, does this change at all the way that is structured? In other words, does the buyer end up paying a little bit more for the home and taking that out? And
one thing that is going to change is a business practice where all buyers, and this is across the country, so mm-hmm. this is going to be a big shift. If you bought a house in recent years, all buyers are now going to enter into what's called a buyer representation agreement with their realtors. This is a specific item from the settlement. Many realtors have done this in the past, where that is an agreement between the buyer and the agent representing them as to how that representation is going to occur, what compensation is. So if that buyer decides they're going to go to a for sale by owner, or if for some reason the seller would say, hey, we're going to shoot ourselves in the foot. Sorry, I'm a little biased when I say this. We're going to shoot ourselves in the foot, and we're not going to cooperate with a buyer agent.
Mm-hmm.
We're only going to pay the seller agent. If they were to do that, number one, they're going to have less buyers looking at their home.
Right.
But this allows the buyer clarity and full transparency on how that representation occurs.
Mm-hmm.
It also is protection for that buyer, so they know who they're working with. I have a friend who's a lender, Chris, and he says all the time, if you call the agent on the sign, it's akin to calling the divorce attorney for your soon-to-be ex-spouse. Most people aren't going to do that.
Right, right. And although that does happen from time to time. I guess I'm wondering, are the structure of who pays what? Again, this is not an unfamiliar scenario for anyone who's bought or sold a home and negotiated who pays what fees. You know, sometimes there will be structures where the buyer pays some of the fees, the seller pays some of the fees, and so on. You know, the closing costs, I guess, is what I'm talking about. You know,
right.
Who pays the closing costs? And that has always been negotiable as well. This becomes one more thing in the negotiation.
My concern in this is this, and this is a little deep to get into, so I'll try to do it real high level. If a buyer is purchasing a home, let's say at $200,000, mm-hmm. and they are within budget to buy that home, they don't necessarily need to put 20% down. A lot of people still think you do.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of loan programs, even conventional loan programs, where you can do less than that. In the research I've done, over 90% of buyers are not putting 20% down.
Yeah.
So it's fairly significant. So let's say $200,000 is within their budget. If they now need to pay the real estate commission because the seller's not going to cooperate, what will inevitably happen is they're going to look at a lower priced house. They're not going to buy your home.
Yeah. So by extension, then the question becomes, does this have any impact long term on even short term or long term on home prices moving forward?
I don't see it changing home prices because across the U.S., we're about 7 million homes short for what demand actually is.
Mm-hmm.
We did not start building enough out of 2008. That's a generation of building.
Yeah, so that's a whole different issue.
Yeah.
But does it, I mean, we already know that there's a shortage of those entry-level homes.
Right.
Does this squeeze that even further by virtue of the fact that, again, people will have to look, in some cases, maybe at less expensive homes?
I think it can. I think it can. And, yeah. You know, we want people to buy a home. That's the key to building generational wealth. We want them in the market.
Right.
Investing in themselves.
So what does this mean? Is this ultimately going to drive agents out of the business?
It could.
Because a lot of what I hear you talking about is that ultimately things are not going to change on the front end to the public. It's a lot of changes that are going to be happening on the back end. So moving forward, is it business as usual to the general public's eye? And it's just changes from a legal and contractual standpoint.
Right. I think change in any industry tends to make people second guess themselves and say, do I want to deal with this?
Mm-hmm.
There's always the possibility folks will decide this is the time I'm going to hang up my license.
But it would be because of the change, not because it would mean that they're not going to be making as much money.
Right. I don't think it comes down to compensation.
Yeah.
We can easily show our value to a consumer, and it's incumbent on us to do that. If we don't do it, shame on us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I challenge the agents within my company to do that. We talked about it this week. You have to be able to demonstrate what that is. If someone is sticker shocked by what we're paying, mm-hmm. it's because they don't understand the breakdown of where that money goes and the cost the agent have to market a property.
And maybe ultimately the biggest change for the consumer in this is that higher level of transparency.
Correct. And I mean, let's just be honest. If you make $10,000 selling a house and you don't sell anything for the next 4 months,
mm-hmm.
who actually works that way?
Yeah.
The argument that a realtor is paid too much, we don't apply that to any other industry. And we front all the risk.
Yeah.
All the risk. I don't know if I'm going to get paid till it closes.
Right. And again, those big paychecks, they are big paychecks, but they come much fewer and further between.
Correct. It's very inconsistent. Yeah. You got to be good at budgeting.
Yeah. Very true. So when does all of this take effect?
In July of this year.
Okay.
And folks also need to keep in mind that.
And what happens to those who already have contracts, who already have homes on the market when this changes?
Well, here's the beauty of this. We don't know. There are a lot of pieces to this that
TBD.
We still don't have clarity on. Yeah. In July is when the change should occur. And this is all assuming that the judges sign off on the settlement and put it into effect. The parties have agreed to the terms, but of course the judicial system needs to approve it.
Yeah. So stay tuned. Again, Brian Witta is with us from Coldwell Banker Flag City to talk about this settlement in the it's been making headlines between the NAR and this lawsuit over commission fees and who pays what. And Brian, thanks very much for breaking it all down for us.
Thank you, Chris.
We are joined on the line this morning by the newly elected state legislative nominee, Ty Matthews. In reaction to results of this week's primary vote, what lies ahead in his bid to represent Ohio's 83rd district? Ty, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. Especially, as I can imagine, the past 24 to 36 hours have, I'm guessing, been kind of a whirlwind for you.
Oh, absolutely. And good morning. And thank you for having me. It's been very surreal. I've been very, very blessed. And yeah, this the last 48 hours has been a lot of phone calls.
I can imagine.
Very grateful and blessed. I just want to thank God for this opportunity. And, you know, without him, I could not have done this.
I have to say that I was, and I mentioned this yesterday on the program, not necessarily surprised at the outcome of the election in terms of the fact that you won it, but I was a bit surprised at the margin of victory. And a number of people that I talked to also said that it was a bit of an eyebrow raiser, that it was such a decisive victory. I'm wondering, did that surprise you as well? And what does that say? What message do you think the voters were saying by such a decisive victory?
Yeah, so I was not expecting that margin of victory.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very, very surprised about that. And I think that's contributed to all the hard work we did. You know, we started as soon as we got back here in August. You know, we hit the ground, we hit the pavement running, knocking doors, going to events. I've had a great campaign team. They were always there for me. You know, really good pulse on the district of how the people in the district are feeling. You know, I didn't hire anyone from Columbus. I was working with a local guy here, and you know, we knew what the voter wanted. I know last time I was on, Chris, I talked to you about the negative ads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were getting a lot of pressure from Columbus wanting us to go negative, and we just refused to do that. And I think a lot of the voters picked that up. You know, I think they started looking at all the mailers. They looked at who paid for those.
Yeah.
And I think our district is just kind of tired of this negativity. So I think a lot of that contributes to that wide margin of victory there. And I think the voters overwhelmingly voted for, you know, a candidate that, hey, I'm going to represent you, you know, and I think a lot of this goes back to the Blue 22,
mm-hmm.
you know, the censorship of my opponent, the political maneuvering. And, you know, I'm going to try my best to be here in the district as much as I can so that I can go to Columbus and represent the 83rd.
Do you believe, I mean, historically there has been the political wisdom has said that it is very difficult to unseat an incumbent in office, particularly a multi-term incumbent. It seems that being an outsider is actually an advantage. Do you think that was part of it as well, this whole outsider push for, I don't want to say drain the swamp, but that kind of mindset?
I think specifically for this race, I believe that was a help. You know, I think it goes back to the Blue 22 and the censorship of the 22 Republicans that sided with the Democrats to elect a speaker candidate. I do think that played a big play into this race. Overall, you know, the power of incumbency is, you know, it's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that through the advantages from Columbus, you know, with the big groups endorsing the incumbent, the amount of money incumbents are able to raise. And, you know, we did a great job, I believe. You know, it was a David and Goliath story. You know, I really do believe that. You know, we had these small little advantages, you know, I believe on our side, like what you just said, but I didn't think it was going to be that overwhelming.
Yeah. So what happens now? I mean, there's no time to rest on your laurels, really. There are only 200 some odd days to the general election. So what next?
Well, I got to focus on getting married. So I'm getting married April 27th, and I promised my fiance that, you know, now until then, that's going to be my main priority, is focusing on, you know, getting married and, you know, doing that right. But, you know, I really do want to focus. You know, I talked about people first, you know, and what's going on at the lake. I believe next week I'm going to go down there and really get a grasp on the situation, what's the needs coming up. But, you know, listen, I John still got a job to do, and I don't want to get in his hair. I don't want to get in his way. I hope he continues to serve the district. He's got a lot to do. My time is going to be spent, you know, building relationships. Now, I didn't get 100% of the vote. You know, there's a lot of Republicans out there that did vote for John, and I hope to earn their support. And from now until November, I'm going to work to earn their vote. And hopefully, I think what we really need in the party right now is unity and getting back to being a party that works together. and not just bickers back and forth. And that's going to be my goal until November, is building back those relationships and hopefully building bridges within the community.
Now, obviously, you don't want to count your chickens before they're hatched and look too far ahead. However, the realities of the makeup of the 83rd District and the history, the voting history of the 83rd District, it would be a shocker if you did not win the general election in November. How much of what you are doing now is starting to lay the groundwork in preparing to take office, in getting your feet wet, hitting the ground running, setting your priorities for the time when you ultimately will likely be sworn in as the next representative of the 83rd District?
Yeah, I will take time to meet with some state reps, you know, seeing, you know, learning the process. But again, my priority is to get elected. You know, don't count your chickens.
Well, your priority is to get married first.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. Yeah. So marriage, get elected, and then I'll be focused in on, you know, learning the process, you know, and again, it's not necessarily in my eyes learning from the people in Columbus. It's, again, learning the concerns of the district so that I can be well-equipped going to Columbus to represent Hancock, Hardin, and Logan County.
That being said, have you reached out or to other party leaders in Columbus, or have they reached out to – has leadership reached out to you?
Yeah, there's been a bunch of state reps that have reached out. The auditor of state has reached out. The treasurer of state, Robert Sprigg, he has reached out. Very brief conversations because there's just been such a volume of calls coming in, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, nothing really specific yet, you know, in the terms of, you know, getting into the nitty gritty, just a bunch of congratulations at the moment.
And again, as we said, don't want to look too far ahead and anticipate something before it happens, but certainly a lot of work to do between now and the general election in November. Again, Ty Matthews, the newly minted Republican nominee for the 83rd District in the Ohio House of Representatives. Ty, thanks very much for taking some time this morning, and best of luck in the general campaign.
Yep. Thank you, Chris.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
The world's largest blueberry has been grown in Australia. I kid you not, this was one of the first things, actually, that popped up on my screen on the Newswire this morning. Actually, I guess it's not the largest blueberry. I stand corrected. It is the heaviest blueberry in the world. It has been grown in Australia. The large fruit took a year to grow and weighs about 70 times as much as a regular blueberry, which means it weighs in at 20.4 grams. The world's heaviest blueberry, 70 times as much as a regular blueberry, and it weighs in at a whopping 20.4 grams. Costa Group grew the berry in New South Wales. That is the very definition of a slow news day, right? When that is the lead story. The world's heaviest blueberry has been grown, but I'm here to make sure that you are fully up to speed with all of the latest important news headlines. Now, this is odd. A California pastor is now behind bars in connection with an alleged $40,000 murder-for-hire plot. A pastor in California jailed on a murder-for-hire plot. Police in Riverside say the man, who's the pastor at a church in Victorville, paid several suspects thousands of dollars to kill a man that his daughter was romantically involved with. Well, I think all the girl dads can maybe relate, but this is taking it to a bit of an extreme, don't you think? The victim actually ended up being shot several times back in October of last year, but was, despite being shot multiple times, able to drive himself to the hospital, and he survived. So that is good, but the pastor is behind bars. All right. Elsewhere in the broken news, back to Australia, the land down under, where a real estate agent in Sydney is feeling the heat after she accidentally burned down a $2 million home that she was preparing to sell. She accidentally burned down the home that she was preparing to sell. Julie Bundock was preparing for an open house back in May of 2019, actually, when she noticed some bedding that the renters had left on the deck to dry. So she stashed the sheets on a shelf and turned on the light above it in the closet, which caused them to catch fire. The house and all of it. She just wanted to spruce it up, you know, and hide the sheets so that it was a little, more displayable for potential clients. And she ended up setting the house on fire. The house and all of its contents were destroyed in the blaze, leading the owner and renters to sue Ms. Bundock, as you might imagine. Earlier this week, after several delays, the judge ruled that she had actively created the risk of fire and the consequent harm. And he ordered she and her real estate agency to pay the owner of the house more than $490,000 for the loss, as well as more than $80,000 to the people who had been renting the house at the time of the fire. Judge also ordered the agent and agency to pay interest on the damages, dating all the way back to the time of the fire. That's like the extreme outcome of the policy. You break it, you buy it. You know, it's it even applies in real estate. That'll really damage your commission. There's let's see here. Some other items in the broken news here this morning. Two college students in Taiwan have been accused of engaging in a rather odd act of insurance fraud. Prosecutors claim the pair, Zhang and Liao are their names. I don't know last names, and I probably couldn't pronounce them even if I had them here. But Zhang and Liao worked together to take out insurance policies. And then the one of them, Mr. Zhang, immersed his legs in dry ice for 10 hours, after which he needed to have them amputated. He claimed that he suffered from extreme cold from riding on a scooter at night. Problem is that Taiwan is a subtropical region, and cases of severe frostbite requiring amputation due to natural climate factors are not only rare, but unheard of. He claimed it was just from the cold. Being out too late at night riding his scooter. The insurance company became suspicious because it's a tropical region. Did you not think of this? Sad for the kid losing his legs, but what an expensive lesson. They have both been charged. Mr. Liao has been suspected of pressuring Zhang into the scheme because he lost money trading cryptocurrency. The pair are not expected to receive an insurance payout. you're not getting away with that. That's not happening. A couple of stories here that are somewhat related. This is a big day of broken news, actually. A book on psychedelics has finally made its way back to a Colorado library after 37 years. The High Plains Library District recently received the book Psychedelics by Bernard Aronson at one of its locations. It was due back in May of 1987. The book on psychedelics. The book came with a note that said, "Sorry, it's so late. It's been a long, strange trip." The head librarian said she believed that maybe the book might have impacted someone's perception of time. This is the reason why it was so late. In a related note, somewhat, one person has been arrested after a routine traffic stop that turned into a marijuana seizure. They seized 150 pounds of processed marijuana. What makes this story worthy of the broken news is where it took place. Weed, Oregon. Weed, Oregon. Sometimes the stories just write themselves. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a skier at Mammoth Mountain, California. This is this is not the dumb criminal of the day. It's just the dumb person of the day. A skier at Mammoth Mountain, California, miscalculated how a wild coyote would react to his offer of friendship. In a video posted online, the man extends his hand to a wild coyote to, I don't know, pet it or have the animal sniff his hand or what have you. This happened in the parking lot of the ski resort. What happened is what you would anticipate happening, or you should anticipate happening. The animal bit him. Bit him in the head. He held out his hand to a wild coyote, and surprise, surprise, the shocker of all shockers, the coyote bit him. Now he has to go for a rabies treatment after trying to interact with a wild animal. Not illegal necessarily, just dumb. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines, and it is that today for sure. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Did you know more than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio for their news, traffic, weather, sports, and a community connection? AM radio is the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping Americans safe in dangerous times. This is News Director Matt Demchek. AM 1330 WFIN is here to serve you, and we take seriously our commitment to our listeners. We would love to hear what you value most about AM radio. Visit WeAreBroadcasters.com and tell us how you depend on AM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news, and the statistics that shape our lives. They say everything is bigger in Texas, including, apparently, how far a six-figure salary will go. The financial technology company Smart Asset recently calculated the value of a $100,000 salary in 72 of the largest cities in the U.S. It used to be that, hey, you were making 100 grand, you were doing pretty well for yourself. But these days, 100,000, it doesn't go quite as far as it used to. After subtracting federal, state, and local taxes, as well as housing, grocery, utility, and other living costs, it turns out that El Paso, Texas is the city where $100,000 will take you the furthest. So if you make 100 grand a year in El Paso, Texas, you're living better than in any other city in the country. A $100,000 salary in El Paso amounts to around $88,000 after taking out those expenses for, you know, all of those necessities. $88,000 out of the $100,000, what you have left. El Paso, actually one of five Texas cities on the list of the top cities where a $100,000 salary goes the farthest. Corpus Christi, San Antonio, Lubbock, and Houston also all ranked in the top 10. So the top five, El Paso at number one, Oklahoma City is number two, Memphis is number three, Corpus Christi, as we mentioned, number four, and San Antonio, number five. So three of the top five and more in the top 10. Conversely, the cities where a $100,000 salary will take you the least, will be the least, no big surprise on really any of these, New York City is at the very bottom of the list. After accounting for all of the things that we just mentioned, you would be left with about $31,000. So $100,000 turns into $31,000 in a hurry in New York City. Honolulu is second last on the list, followed by San Francisco. Brooklyn, which I think most people would consider, you know, New York City, but it's a separate city. Brooklyn was number four, and Los Angeles, number five. So no surprise on any of those expensive cities where $100,000 salary would take you the least. It would be the least. Washington, D.C. is right above those bottom five down there as well. And in case you're curious, Cleveland is the number one Ohio city. Ohio didn't fare too badly on the list. Overall, Cleveland is 15th best on that list. Columbus is number 16, so Cleveland, Columbus back-to-back. And Cincinnati is number 32, so not too bad, but the lowest that Ohio goes on the list in terms of how far a six-figure salary will go, Cincinnati at number 32. So, happening around town, it is an evening of bakery trivia, night of fun to benefit Adaptco, program building an all-inclusive Hancock County community. And joining us with more information is Aaron Wheeler from Adaptco. This is a group, an organization that I would imagine a lot of folks may not necessarily be familiar with. I mean, unless you have a child or a loved one with special needs, you may not be aware of what Adaptco is. So, Aaron, let's start with that. What is this organization and what it is that you do?
So, yeah, and I'm one of those people myself. I kind of integrated myself into this world a couple years ago with my stepson. It's a group that is a parent-teacher community organization that builds a community supporting children with developmental differences as well as their families. We bring together people to support empowering special needs in the community, trying to get outreach for those who don't know what it is, rather that be supporting schools for trips, special needs schools if they need sensory boxes, that kind of thing, as well as individual events like Fall Fest out of the park that are catered to more
the inclusive nature.
Yeah, in more in a sense of nobody's rushed to do anything, lines aren't as pushy, there's more activities for kids where they can take their time, there's sensory areas that aren't as crowded, so we try to market it to as many different people as we can.
You know, it is something that unless you have a special needs child or a loved one in your family, you don't realize all of the different ways. I mean, just from hearing you describe some of the things that you do, all of the different ways and the different things that you have to consider when just planning out everyday things.
That's correct. And again, I can use myself as an example. Seeing parents deal with this now on the opposite end of this is, I mean, these people are some of the strongest people I've ever met just to deal with basic things that people don't really notice that could be
you don't give a second thought to.
Yeah, getting ready for school for some people could be a hour-long challenge where normally for some people it's a 5 minutes and you're out the door. So it's when we plan events like that, it is to try and lessen that for parents as much as for the children, so they can have the parents can have fun as well as the kids.
And I think one of the other things that you mentioned is worth highlighting too. You talk about the fact that it's not just planning those events and that sort of thing, but also making others aware of those challenges and those special needs to kind of spread that word and show parents they're not alone in this in this challenge.
That's right. And again, we've donated to the FHS Thanksgiving meal in 2023, cooking supplies for the Donnell for job skills, sensory bins for schools and even adaptive art classes through Awakening Minds Art here in town.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, we try to outreach as much as we can, just not in the Findlay area, but close to home is where more and more you find, the more people know about this, the more people get involved and want to help out. Like, we have amazing volunteers that help out at all these events who aren't ADAPCO board members. And mm-hmm. I mean, our board members range from parents of special needs kids, teachers. I mean, and the more we put it out there, just the more it grows, which is fantastic.
We have seen that in recent years, that there has been a greater awareness of the need for these accommodations, so that events, activities, these everyday things that most families, as we said, kind of take for granted, can be extended to those with those unique needs as well.
Right.
So you've got an event coming up next Friday to help in both sides of those missions, both in terms of raising awareness and obviously raising some funds for doing what you do. It is a bakery trivia night. Give us the details on this.
So every year we look for donations from local companies, some more local than others, and we put together baskets that... Some are experiences, some are gift cards to, like, restaurants, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we raffle them off. Entry is free. You can buy a paddle. And anytime there's a trivia question to ask, you raise your paddle. And if you get it right, you get a baked good.
Okay.
And then raffle baskets are raffled off midway through the event. And then towards the end... if you do win, you have to be present to collect. But
you'll want to be there anyway.
Oh yeah,
you've got all kinds of things going on.
It's a fun event. There's food. It's a fun time.
We always want to highlight the food.
Oh
there
yeah,
there is food.
Oh, there's plenty of food. there's plenty of baked goods for sure.
So bring your appetite. And do folks need tickets in advance or in
no?
Advance?
It's free entry.
It's free admission.
You can buy raffle tickets while you're there.
Okay.
50-50 drawing, all of that is in-house, so
okay,
there's no entry fee.
All right.
It is open to anybody who wants to come, families and everyone in between.
And this is happening at the Moose Lodge on West Main Cross next Friday evening, begins at 5:30, right?
Correct.
Okay, we've got a link on our webpage for more information about the bakery trivia night. Should be an awful lot of fun to benefit the ADAPTCO program locally. And for the benefit of those who want to learn more about the organization, what you do, or maybe need to reach out for assistance or want to know how you can help, how do they do that? How do they reach out and get in touch with you?
You can find us on Facebook. We have our own website. Any kind of contact info is on the website that you can reach out to us. Somebody will get back to you via phone call or an email.
Again, building an all-inclusive Hancock County community. That is the goal of the ADAPTCO program. And Aaron Wheeler from the board with us this morning. More details on bakery trivia. We've got it linked up at goodmornings.net as well. Aaron, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Visit us online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program to finish up the week, Americans will wager nearly $3 billion on March Madness. It's all in good fun, right? But what about when it isn't? Plus, each year, Canine Companions provides hundreds of service dogs at no cost to assist individuals with disabilities. But where do those canines come from? So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.